Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 128 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I'm your host, Ken, and this week we have a Cantina conversation with our book reviewer, Megan McCarthy-Bianc, and a returning guest, New York Times bestselling author, Hafsa Faisal. Now, Hafsa joined us last year at C2E2 for an interview about her book, We Hunt the Flame. And this time she's joining us for the recently released We Free the Stars, which is book two of the duology here. Now, if you're new to Hafsa's work, I'll give a quick warning that in this episode, there are some spoilers for her first book. So if that's a big deal to you, you have been warned. For everybody else, enjoy the interview.
All right. We are here with Hafsa Faisal, author of We Hunt the Flame, and her that's her debut novel, and the sequel is We Free the Stars, coming out, and the release date is January 19th, correct?
Correct.
Cool, awesome. Okay, so once again, thank you so much, Hafsa, for taking the time to talk with us, and you are a returning guest, so I don't know if you remember at C2E2 last year, almost a year ago, if you can believe it, I kind of bombarded you a little bit. We were at the panel, the young adult panel at Madison Street Books in Chicago, and you were with Crystal Sestari and Daniel Krauss, and I kind of bombarded you at the end of the panel to ask you if you had time for an interview, and you squeezed in whatever free time you had at the convention. So you technically are a returning guest here, so welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me again. I do remember, and it does not feel like it was a year ago. It feels way longer.
Oh, no. Yeah. 2020 was special, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. Speaking of, I hope you're doing well, staying healthy, you know, body, mind, and soul, all that good stuff. How have you been, first of all? Are you hanging in there? I know it's, you know, dealing with a pandemic and releasing your second book, and, you know, how was, how did it compare to the first time around?
Yeah, so I am hanging in here, and today I woke up with a stuffy nose, but I'll be fine.
Oh, no.
yeah, so the sequel. Writing a first book and writing a sequel are two very different things that I had expected to some extent, but not the full reality of it. When you're writing your first book, and it's your debut and you still don't have an agent, you are writing to please one agent just to get someone to sign you. Publishing is still an enigma. It's such a dream. You don't really think of the full extent of it. And then when you're writing your sequel, you are, well, first of all, you're writing on a, you're not writing in a vacuum anymore. You're writing on a deadline, and you've got all these people that you need to please, your agent, your editors, your publishing team, but they've always loved you, but it's the critics that you need to please. And they, not just later, but the, these voices are in your head, like constantly telling you, no, this is wrong. This is wrong. That's not, I don't think that'll go well. So in my heart of hearts, I had the story already like there to write, but my conscious mind wasn't letting me. And it took so much longer. And it was such a battle that this book is still something I'm not sure how to like comprehend in my brain.
No, no.
yeah, it was quite a journey, and I still can't believe that we're nearly there.
Yeah, because I do follow you on Instagram, and I know you've unfortunately had to push back the release date at least once, right?
We pushed it back three times, I think. The first time was because, yes, I needed an extension. The second time was partly because I needed an extension, and then secondly because of COVID. And then the third time, we were aiming for September, actually September, October, and I think we pushed it back again because of the election. And so, yeah, I think the date that we have now, January 19th, is a pretty good one. Yes.
A winner. I would hope so. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's just one of those things, I guess, where it's, you can only prepare for so much. And, you know, I did a bunch of these author interviews last year too. And, you know, you're not alone. There are not only just with having to push back release dates, but just with dealing with, you know, unforeseen challenges and, in the publishing industry in general.
Yeah.
You know, especially during election year, and everything was just a hot mess. And so, no, I'm excited for you, and I'm happy for you that you guys have finally got it locked in, and we're almost there.
I'm excited, but of course, it's going to be something new to navigate with. I mean, last year we kind of prepared with all these online events and all of that, but realizing that so many bookstores are closed and so many people are like more reluctant to shop in person, and it's just, it's different. It's a new atmosphere and environment, and I think we're still learning how to navigate that.
Yeah, of course, because I mean, the covers of these books are really just so beautiful, and I know you have a graphic design background, mm-hmm. and so I know that you designed them yourself.
I did not, but I did have a lot of say in it.
Okay, because I think I remember you were kind of saying, well, you kind of designed something, and you're like, this is kind of what I want, and they were able to go off of that. I think maybe that's what I remember.
Actually, for the original cover for We Hunt the Flame, it was a lot simpler. I did pull together like things online just to say like I'd like the typography to look like this. And they did go off of that for the We Hunt the Flame original cover before we realized that this was not working out. And then we scrapped it to start afresh. And that's when we have the cover that we have now. We hired an artist for it. And I did suggest the scenes for him to portray on both the covers, but it was all his magic.
Oh, okay, that's awesome. That's great. Yeah, because I understand that where I was going with that is because when you're in the bookstore and you see, you know, the covers have to stand out, especially depending on what other releases you're kind of competing with around that time. And so, yeah, I imagine you lose some of that magic and some of that atmosphere, some of that you know, original vibe, so to speak, where you hope your readers either, you know, because this is the sequel, you hope to, you know, maximize the audience from your first book. You know, you're hoping that you already have that audience, that they loved the first book so much that they just have to know what happened. And so, you know, hopefully that they're just kind of waiting for this release, but then also maybe you want to catch some fresh eyes too. And that's really difficult to do when you don't have you know, that significant avenue or channel, so to speak, to reach out to prospective readers. So yeah, I could definitely appreciate and respect that struggle that, you know, that goes into this. But at least, you know, kind of going off of that, because it was a sequel, you're hoping that you had a hold on the audience, the readers from the first book too. Yeah. So you know, was that kind of like, were you kind of trying to maximize on that? Like, how did you approach that differently in terms of how you marketed the second book?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been very geared on marketing online, and I didn't really realize the full weight of how in-person events did until I actually did those events. Like when Macmillan took me around for so many events last year that I was barely home. It was just something different about people seeing you in person and then being like, okay, there's a book I can pick up. Because online, you have to scroll through pages of books to find anything. And there's only so many books that an online avenue can feature and spotlight. And so we just rely on like readers perusing bookshelves and then being like, oh, this is a pretty cover, and then opening it up and falling in love. And that's something that can't be found online. I mean, yes, I have been growing an audience and trying to entice them to read my book, but I don't think we can ever match that that surprise and like that the people who walk into a bookstore and unexpectedly pick up a book. Because also, We Hunt the Flame a Barnes & Noble book club pick. And so it had prime shelf space across Barnes & Noble locations. And so it was easy to pick up, even if you didn't know that you wanted to read it. Sure.
That's definitely challenging. But, you know, I think I'm hoping, I'm crossing my fingers for you, because you know, I read this book and there's a lot going on. And not only just kind of wrapping up, you know, and hopping off of the events of the first book and dealing with those consequences, but then also kind of like just taking it so many steps further. And what, you know, I forget the word that you use. It was a Zumra, the group, the family group that, the crew that in this story had to deal with and to accomplish the mission. I mean, because there were so many moving parts and, you know, there's some drama and there's internal conflict within, you know, each character. And then there's conflicts among external conflicts among these mm-hmm. characters. And so there was a lot of moving pieces, but it all fits so wonderfully. It's and you just have like such a great talent for you know, providing such rich details, so that, you know, we have all the details and all the imagery and language that we need to really mm-hmm. picture what you wanted us to see, in addition to all the drama going on and all the suspense and everything. And so I guess kind of what I want to like, what kind of also something I didn't really get to ask you during the last time we talked, what kind of research went into you creating the world, creating these characters, like, you know, coming up with the story? Because also in the second book, there's a lot more politics mm-hmm. involved. And, you know, there's all these different little elements in addition to just being such a rich and such a detailed culture that you've kind of mixed into this storyline. So kind of like how, you know, where did you pull any inspiration or research from?
I've talked about this before, but when I started writing the story, it was set in a very Eurocentric world. I used to research Welsh names and Welsh places and like the architecture and the setting. It was very Eurocentric. And then I wrote about a third of the story and something just wasn't working out. And so I stopped. And because I'm a designer, I like the visual process really helps me think. So I started sketching a map for myself mm-hmm. For this world that I was writing. And I realized that it looked a lot like the Mediterranean region. And then I just thought, this is so perfect. Why don't I just set in a world inspired by the Middle East? And then, so I scrapped the whole story and started writing it fresh. But one thing I always admired about fantasy was how authors took so many liberties to do whatever, to create a world that they wanted the way they wanted it to be. And they always had these touchstones, like yes, it was far out there. Yes, they might have been or ogres or whatever it is, trolls and all of that, but it was always very Eurocentric. And so I thought, if authors could have been doing this for years, then I could do this in a setting that I wanted it to, that I preferred. And so I started crafting this new world, and I love world building, like the details and architecture and all that, which is something that it's a challenge sometimes, but I find it so cathartic almost, and I love doing it. And so it didn't feel like work most of the time. So I just started incorporating the language and the architecture and the setting and the clothing. And I wanted these touchstones to be there for anyone who just picked it up and would be like, oh, this is very Middle Eastern. But at the same time, I created my own histories and politics and all these different parts right. that would make the story unique. So I drew these lines where I wanted it to be, to feel very real world. And then on the opposite side to be very, I mean, the way I wanted it to be, because sometimes I just don't like research and I'd rather create things myself than than have to read up on how things were way back when. I guess I did however I felt the story would work best, but with the least work amount of work for me.
Yeah. Or at least, you know, I think it's still a lot of work, but you enjoyed it so much so that it felt fun. Yeah. So then kind of piggybacking off of that, since it was kind of a challenge for you, to kind of find, you know, the right world or the right time period or the right kind of like region where this story is going to be based. What other parts of the writing process or anything else were like the most challenging, or maybe it was a specific scene to write or relationships between characters that like, what was the most difficult for you?
So with We Hunt the Flame, I feel like I enjoyed most of the process. Edits were difficult because that was of course my first time working with an editor and having to like scrap entire bits just so that things would make sense. The internal journeys, the arcs, I didn't realize it at first, and I was afraid that I would end up changing way too much. Like, it didn't feel like it would be my story anymore. Yeah. But what I didn't realize was that I was keeping the bones of the story the same, but making them much more pronounced. And that's the beauty of working with an editor who understands what your story is trying to portray. But with We Free the Stars, the challenge came with expanding these relationships. For Zafira and Nasir, it's going deeper than their initial attraction. For the rest of the characters, it's going beyond that initial trust that they sort of cobbled together in the first book, where they're just like, okay, I trust that you're not going to kill me, so let's just face these bad guys together. But in We Feed the Stars, they are delving deeper and creating relationships that would last much longer than a shaky alliance on an island. So it was like going deeper that I had a hard time with. And it was discovering more about the characters and the story that it was exciting in a way, but also kind of scary. But yeah, I guess I enjoyed it in the end.
Whoops, sorry, but just had to mute. I was listening to you, but my son started getting a little bit fussy. So, okay. Thank you. Okay. So, the husband to the rescue. Okay. I know we're trying to coordinate because his parental leave ended. So we're trying our best to just like take shifts and switch off. Aww. And, tag out, tag in and all that. So, So going off of those relationships that you were mentioning, with Zafira and Nasir, so much pining. Oh my God. that was one of the things that you mentioned in our first interview, where I think I asked you what we can expect from the sequel, and you were like, oh, more pining. And I kind of knew what to expect, but I was just like, oh my God, I felt myself screaming, like, in my head, just kind of like, oh my God, just kiss already. Or just like, just tell, just be honest with each other. But it's like, they're just trying to be realistic, because there's a much bigger picture that goes, arguably beyond what they are to each other, even though they're definitely like, they're kind of like dualities. They're like two sides to the same coin almost. Like they, even though they grew up in very different households, very different socioeconomic classes, they still both have a lot of similarities too, where they both have complicated relationships with their parents, and they have their sibling relationships are very interesting, like where Zafira, her and her sister, they're very like tight, and it's like the blood thicker than water type deal. But with Nasir and Altair, it's a little more sophisticated because, kind of going, being a little spoilery, but I mean, the first book's been out for a while, because you realize that they are, they didn't know, or at least Nasir didn't know that they were related. And I guess, maybe I missed it. I don't know if it was clear that Altair knew and he was just keeping it to himself. Okay, right. Just trying not to be, it's kind of interesting what you did with these relationships and like the sibling relationships, but then also kind of when readers might compare Nasir and Zafira's upbringing, it's like they're very different, but they kind of play not necessarily the same role per se, but like their role in society is kind of like they're regulating something. And Nasir, he's unfortunately bound to what his dad wants. And then Zafira, she's not necessarily bound, but it's more so like her internal like obligation. Like she feels an obligation to like feed her people. And she's kind of the only person that has been able to successfully do so, at least in the first book. And then so it was just interesting kind of like comparing these two characters, even though they had such different upbringings. It's like, it's almost like you can take that with you anywhere you go. It's like, yeah, at the end of the day, we all have similar struggles. We can all relate in one way, shape or form to one another. And so I thought that was really interesting, kind of like not only how you kind of played off of their roles, but then also their relationships either with other people and with their siblings as well. So like, I know you have a couple of sisters, right? Yeah. So did you kind of like go off of that? I think you mentioned before that they're kind of like your critics too. did you kind of like use that experience to kind of like, insert little elements into the relationships for Zafira, or even, you know, Nasir and Altair as well?
I guess subconsciously I might have. Like, I didn't think about how Lana or Altair could be, like, if Zafira and Nasir are both me as I'm writing from their points of view, I didn't really think about that their siblings as my siblings. I was just writing it in a relationship that I value so deeply in my own life. I have noticed that sometimes I would say something on social media and then my sister would come and respond, and then I'd have readers come and be like, ah, I see the Nasir and Altair in this relationship. I am very much the Nasir and she's very much the Altair. So I might have been pulling from her when I was writing his character. I don't know. I mean, that is just a relationship. I mean, the relationship I have with my sisters is very, very deep and something I value so much. And they are like my two favorite people in the world. And so like I said, consciously, I didn't really do it that way, but I think subconsciously I might've been pulling from there.
No, that makes a lot of sense though. Cause because I read so much and I'm just so fascinated sometimes by authors, like being able to just be so creative and not only create different types of personalities, but they can also create and imagine how these different personalities might make decisions or might react to certain situations and might react to other characters and all that. And so, I always kind of like think of, you know, what kind of like experience might have had some sort of influence on the process here. So let me see. So we went over sibling relationships. Just looking through my notes, trying to see where I left off here. you mentioned something when you were, you said that you maybe kind of imagine yourself as if you were, you know, considering that scenario, maybe you are Nasir or Zafira. So like kind of going off of that, how was it difficult or challenging to write from the point of view of the opposite sex?
It was not, which is kind of strange because when I was, I mean, We Hunt the Flame is my fifth manuscript and my first four stories, only the first one was from the point of view of a girl. The other four were all, the other three were all male points of view. And then when it came to Beyond the Flame, Zafira was actually a boy in the beginning. I had a hunter going into a forest before I realized that I don't know if a boy would be doing this for his people. And so I made her a girl. I don't know. I never saw it as challenging because I do have a brother. He lives with me and he was my earliest friend. And so I can see how they'd be stubborn and how when they're growing up, they would be distancing themselves just because society tells them to, but they're not actually that way. And so seeing those struggles with him, I guess, influenced some of Nasir's reluctance to open himself up to others, especially as Zafira. Where society tells them that they cannot display weakness and cannot cry and cannot do all these things that are only supposed to be done by girls. And so I don't know why. I never found it difficult. I guess I found it refreshing and I felt comfortable writing it. Most likely because of my brother, because he was the first sibling that I had. My sisters came later. And so I was... Okay. I think I was 5 when he was born. And so I had been alone for so many years. And so he became my first friend and closest friend. And so seeing like the differences that are between us now, I think made its way into my writing of Nasir.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, that's interesting that you, you mentioned that Zafira first you, had written her as a male. Cause I noticed that a running theme is kind of like, at least more so in the first book, probably was like the oppression against women and how, you know, how horribly unequal it was. And, you know, I think it was kind of like if, you know, there was a business owner and if everything should have gone to his daughter in the event that he had passed away, but, you know, because it wasn't, you know, women weren't supposed to own businesses. They weren't supposed to run businesses. And so that was, I remember that being like a significant event in the first book, or at least kind of like a significant side note. Cause you know, things that it was just kind of, showing the reader, like the culture, unfortunately, and, you know, how that kind of leaked through. And I thought that that was because of that kind of running theme. I had it understood as Zafira being a female is completely intentional. And it almost seemed like it would have been a female from the get-go, because, you know, you kind of, that's kind of part of the point. It was like, because the significance of her being a female is so powerful, because it's like, women weren't supposed to be doing that. They weren't supposed to be hunting. They weren't supposed to be, you know, running the show. And I think it kind of almost adds a level of resentment maybe from like the men in that society, where they, once they found out it was a woman, even though there are some characters, it had kind of been mentioned that like some characters had been like, oh, I knew it was a woman. And then, or at least in the second book, you kind of mentioned that. But then there, yeah, it almost seemed like maybe the men, once they found out that the hunter was a huntress, that they might even resent that the fact that they had relied on a woman for food, you know, for sustenance, to provide, you know, for their families and just for to help survive. And it was like all of this time, and like maybe the men in the book or in that particular culture were comfortable being fed by another man. But I guess it's like, yeah, it was very significant. Like even as like she kind of revealed herself as she's like pulling away on the boat in the first book, just like, you know, but when there no damage could be done, when it's kind of too late, she's already off. And but, you know, at the last second, no, here, there we go. You're relying on a woman. This is, you know, this is who, this is what's going on. excuse me. It just seemed like Zafira, her being a female would have been like the blanketed, like the umbrella statement, that you were trying to make in, you know, just the female empowerment or just overcoming the oppression in general, just from what this culture in particular, was set up to behave.
So a few months before I found my first agent, I actually traveled to the Middle East. It was my first time visiting Saudi Arabia. And I was extremely surprised by the freedoms that women had there. Yes, they wore the veil. And so that seemed like a symbol of oppression to some people. But it was just so surprising when I saw that. And I realized that I hadn't been writing the oppression in Zafira's caliphate in her city-state based on the Middle East, which I didn't know because I was born and raised here in America. But it had been these differences in the society that we live in, that I was born and raised in. Yeah. So my parents have four children, and there's three girls and one boy. And people are always surprised by how much freedom my father gives his daughters. Like they expect something otherwise when they see us. They don't think that we're allowed to do what we're allowed to do. And that's because it's this, our society, even today, just values males over female. And it's appalling and weird. And I don't know when it's going to end. But the whole thing about Zafira's people is, I mean, the whole reason why she does what she does and the difficulties that she faces, I don't think has to do with the fact that she's doing it. It's the fact that there's less value because it's a girl doing these things. And just because she's a woman, her accomplishments are degraded, and it suddenly seems like something bad has been done. Like maybe we're all going to suffer because it was a girl doing XYZ. And I feel like that is so prevalent in, even in the year 2021, I don't know, this is a new year, so we'll see. But even the year 2020, it was so obvious. Yeah. There's just so many discrepancies and it's just not fair. So many unfairnesses.
I'm right there.
And
with
I feel
you.
Like that, those, my disappointments and my anger just made its way into Zafira's character. And I think when I said that she had been a male in the beginning, I guess I just didn't realize that it was a girl dressing up that way right at the start. I needed to write a bit further to see that, okay, this is actually not a boy. This is a girl, and this is why she's doing what she's doing. But so it was a journey, and I love it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that I think that's just so, so common with coming up with a story and creating a world and making sure all the ends tie together. But you know, because kind of going off of that with Zafira, you know, I'm glad that you made the choices that you did, just because it, and I love that some of your like frustration kind of went into that too. I think it just makes it that much more relatable. Cause you know, yeah, in the year 2020, where women have made strides, but it's because we've been so relentless and annoying about it. And, we just made demands and, you know, demanded to be heard, at the very least. And so, you know, I feel very fortunate even so to be living in this era rather than, you know, 100 years ago, even as little as 100 years ago, which women barely had the right to vote 100 years ago. I think they just got passed. And so, yeah, no, I'm right there with you. And I'm kind of just grateful for the baby steps, whether or not they're, you know, we have, obviously we're not quite there, but,
We're getting there.
Just kind of going off of that. Yeah. Yeah. And in the meantime, you know, we have characters like Zafira and, oh God, what's her best friend's name? I keep forgetting. Yes. Yasmin. She was, I loved her too. I loved her. She was just, you know, she was just unapologetic, and she was exactly what, I just loved the relationship, the friendship, and how deep it was. And it just reminded me of some of me and some of my closest friends, my best friend, even, where it was like, whether I like it or not, I would do anything for her, and she knows it. And it's, you know, and it's really refreshing. And I appreciate being able to see those types of relationships. Like, I kind of just connected with Zafira and Yasmin in that way, where it was like, there was just that level of understanding that you did a good job of feeding that and making that, helping the reader to feel that with so, you provide a lot of rich detail, but it was almost like I felt it with what you gave us, just between the two of them. Cause it was like, you know, the way that you were describing, like, you know, oh, sister of my heart, I think was the phrase that you said. And it was just, yeah, it was just like, you can't help but like the love that you feel for this person. That's just, you know, even if they drive you nuts, and even if they get under your skin because they know how, it's like, you know, you're stuck with each other no matter what. And it's like, you know, nope, that's for lack of better words, it's like my ride or die. You're my homie, and you know, I got you, and I, you know, you drive me nuts, but yeah, it's like, I will be there for you. And it's, I loved that relationship between, Yasmin and Zafira. And so kind of, let me see. Oh, one thing I wanted to ask. So like, you've been, you know, through a lot. You're still kind of, you had this story written when you were 19.
I started writing when I was 19. Almost?
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And then you finished it. Like, I think you said it took four or 5 years for you to finish it. Yeah. 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 So, was there a reason why you made it a duology and not a trilogy? Cause it was, they're both pretty long. I feel like you could have, worked.
I actually wanted it to be a trilogy, but Macmillan only purchased two books. And so it was a two book deal. And then after We and the Flame was out, I actually started plotting We Free the Stars. And I felt like it could be two books. Like, I had enough material to expand the story into a trilogy. So I spoke to my editor, but she was, she didn't really want to do that, and I wasn't sure why. And so I had to like cut back on some plot lines and like condense the story a bit, even though it is the length that it is now. And I later found out that she was actually burnt out on trilogies, and so she on long series, and so she didn't. I guess it was a more personal thing for her.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately for me.
And you kind of just said, okay, fine. I'm glad it worked out. But you know, who would have, you know, what could have been, I guess. So what advice, you know, would you give yourself, would you give to your past self, maybe like, maybe in the point of the process of maybe you just starting out with these ideas and putting pen to paper, mm-hmm. or, you know, maybe at your lowest point, maybe a lowest point is a bad term to use, but at the point where you just, you found the most difficult challenges along the process of where you kind of maybe either hit a wall, like what kind of advice, like now that mm-hmm. you've been through it, and you're almost here at the release on, of the second book of, We Free the Stars, what advice would you give to yourself, knowing what you know now, like, you know, 19-year-old Hafsa?
I feel like 19-year-old Hafsa had a lot more confidence in herself than the Hafsa who was writing We Free the Stars. Publishing, I don't know, there's just something about the industry that sort of wrings you dry and like makes you feel things that you hadn't experienced before. Like I did not realize anxiety went as deep as it did until I got published, until I had a book deal and people were reading my book. It's We Free the Stars, like I said, all those critic voices in my head, and writing the story, there were numerous moments when I looked at my phone and thought, what if I called my editor and said, I can't do it. Like, let me just cancel this contract and give you back the money. There were several times when I thought that because I just couldn't. I was just writing the story and like it, words were impossible to find. I felt like I could no longer speak English, even though it was the only language that I knew. It was, I don't think I've ever experienced anything as difficult as this book's journey was. And it was only later that I realized that I was experiencing extreme burnout because I was traveling a lot for the first book and still doing press interviews and all these different things. And at the same time, having to write a story while listening to all these voices in my head. And it was too much, and with the deadline attached, because I was homeschooled since I was 12. And so I was always working on my own terms. And I started running a business when I was 17. And so I never like worked for anyone else. I didn't have that experience with me. And so it was giving up control and a whole bunch of things that just like crammed into these 2 or 3 years of time that made it impossible to like think ahead. I actually believed that I would never be able to write again. And when my editor was like, once you're done with this, what do you think you're going to do next? I was like, I don't think I want to do anything next. But yeah. After I turned in We Free the Stars and I had a moment to just like process everything, slowly I just came back into myself. Like I realized that I can put words together still. I just needed to relax and take a break. I clearly had not taken a break and I had forgotten what breaks were like. And it was, so if I could go back and tell myself that something that would keep me going, it would be that it will get better. You just need to breathe and to take it one step at a time. I tend to stress way too much sometimes.
No, I don't think you're alone in that. I think everybody at some point could say I'm stressing too much about something in general. But I think, you know, it depends. I think it's probably, you probably stressed an appropriate amount considering the weight and considering the fact that, yeah, like you were saying, like you had always been on your own schedule and working at your own pace. And that's a luxury that you were able to enjoy up until you had to work off of someone else's itinerary or deadlines. And yeah, so that's definitely understandable to get overwhelmed and, you know, it's unfamiliar territory and this is a big deal. You know, it's your debut book and you've been working on this baby for so long. So no, it makes total sense that, you know, your mental health would kind of catch up to you and everything would kind of, you know, cause you feel that pressure and then you feel, and you're working in an environment and in a, you know, your process is, you're forced to work on a different process than what you're used to. And so what kind of coping mechanisms did you use, if any, during those hard times?
Coping mechanisms? Besides crying and thinking it's the end of the world. No, I think for every writer, a support system is crucial. For me, it was my sisters and my family. Like my sisters were there every step of the way. And there to remind me that, okay, you can do this. You've done this before. You just need to do it again. And having someone you can trust to be like, okay, actually this in your story is not good, but you can do better. You can do this, you can do that. And having someone you can trust and who isn't afraid to tell it like it is, it's very important to have. And I'm so fortunate that I had my sisters there to like guide me and help me with so much of it. Because when you're writing or when you're just into something so much, you kind of get so deep into it that you can't see the forest for the trees sometimes. And that was something my sisters helped me with.
Yeah. That's great. No, that's awesome. I'm so glad that, you had such a strong support system, mm-hmm. especially with, wrapping up the stories. Cause I'm assuming they kind of stayed with you during this last year too, mm-hmm. which was in and of itself, business is not usual. I think, you're not alone in the fact, even anybody who's been forced to kind of change up how they do things, or have become overwhelmed and, have been forced to kind of deal with mm-hmm. their mental health or other scenarios, things that they haven't had to deal with before.
Yeah.
I think it's comforting to know that they're not alone and that they were using all the resources that they had available, and all the coping mechanisms, whether it's crying or just, forcing an ear mm-hmm. Of whoever's around or whoever you kind of lean on. So that's great. And I know that it was really rough and a lot of, you encountered a lot of challenges, but I hope that you see that it was all worth it. Cause I loved both of these books. They were, it was easy to get lost in the details and in the world. And, there were times where I thought I had things figured out and I didn't, but I like being fooled when it comes to reading. And then, there were definitely some heartbreaking moments, but that's part of it. That's part of what makes a great story.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
You tug at the heartstrings. Yeah. Yeah. No, of course. And I am really hoping for, success for you this time around. I'm excited for you and I'm rooting for you in terms of having to release a book. Hopefully, right after the new year, let's hope that it's almost a fresh start. At least I think that's what the rest of the world is hoping. That it's, the year is over and we can put a new number on everything that we date now. We're just almost kind of just taking a breath of fresh air and starting this up. And I'm hoping that that new energy helps you within the next couple of weeks as you prepare for the release.
Thank you.
And so we'll just like wrap up here. Yeah, no, of course. We'll wrap up here and one last question. So you kind of mentioned that you didn't want to write anymore almost after this process, but I think according to your social media, are you working on something else, right?
I think you've announced it recently. A few weeks ago, actually. While I was drafting We Hunt the Flame, since I started writing stories, I was always drawn to like dapper things. And I had been teasing a new story and I had called it Guns and Tea. But I announced it recently and the title is A Tempest of Tea. And it's actually set in a universe, in an expanded universe of We Hunt the Flame. So it's set in the same world, but with entirely new characters and a new story and all of that. But
It's like the same time period too?
It's actually a bit later.
I was going to say, is it like 100 years later or something?
No, I don't, it's not that far into the future. It is a bit later, but not that far. I have...
So it's like kind of after the events.
After the events, but I have left the door open in We Free the Stars to hopefully go back for another story. I've only written a little bit of A Tempest of Tea thus far, and so I am still working on it, and then we'll see where it fits in on the timeline. This is a new story for me, like a new setting, new characters, new things to tackle. Like I have vampires this time, and colonialism, and a girl who is bent on vengeance, and there is a heist. So it's a whole bunch of things thrown together, and I'm really, really excited for it. It's the first in a new duology.
Yeah, no, that sounds cool. Yeah, okay. It's another more people being burnt out on trilogies, I'm guessing. Or did you just find a nice groove in a duology?
No, I just thought, if my editor is not interested, then I'll just go with the duology. I think, I don't know if I can handle two more sequels, like if it's anything like We Free the Stars. Hopefully it isn't, but if it is, then I don't want to deal with it again.
Yeah. It's almost like, you know, it's just, you're obviously very good and you love what you do. But yeah, it's kind of like, you don't want to start to hate it. So you gotta, make it work. And luckily, you know, you're an experienced writer. Now you're a published writer, a published author. And so, you know, what next other than to just like take what you have and go with it. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. So thank you so much, Hafsa Faisal, author of We Hunt the Flame. And then the sequel that's coming out right now is We Free the Stars. It's out on January 19th. Once again, these books were so cool. I loved the characters. I loved how they interacted with one another. And I loved the big, it almost seemed like a three-part mission with a bunch of wrenches thrown in and a forbidden love, of course. But it was very enjoyable. It's easy to get lost in the mix or at least lost in the story, I should say. And I'm hoping for your success. I'm rooting for you this year and, you know, best of luck as you work on your
newest
project.
Thank you so much for having me. It was fun.
Yeah. Glad we got a little bit more time to talk rather than, And, you know, hopefully when the world kind of comes back to normal and everybody, it's a little bit safer, you know, to return to some sort of normalcy. I hope that, you know, we get to do a lot more in-person events, and because I know those are important, but it's also nice to, I miss that energy as well.
Me too.
So I'm right there with you. Yeah. All right. Awesome. Well, stay healthy, stay sane, you know, hang in there and look forward to following you. And, you know, hopefully if, you know, we could keep in touch and we can have you back again to talk about your new works when the time is right.
Yeah, that will be in some time. I mean, it'll be here before we know it.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks again for listening to another Cantina Conversation. If you're new here, go ahead to your podcast player, provide us a rating review, like, subscribe, share something, whatever you can do to help grow the community. It's greatly appreciated. And hopefully you download the next weekly news from the Nerd Cantina. With all that said, thanks again. Talk to you later, nerds.